This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's our weekly review of news affecting the tri-state area. And joining us today, Cincinnati Inquirer government reporter Jesse Balmert and local politics reporter Jason Williams, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, and WCPO.com opinion editor David Holdhouse. You can join the conversation this afternoon at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jesse, Joe, Jason, David, thanks everybody for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Welcome.
Great to be
here. Good to be here.
Jesse, we finally had the Trump administration weigh in this week on sanctuary cities, which seems like that's going to be something we're going to be debating for a long time here. But what happened? Sean Spicer actually came out and talked about Cincinnati in this case, didn't he?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse. I'm sorry. Did I say Jesse?
Jason.
Jason. Sorry. Jason.
Sorry. Yeah, actually, I give credit to Channel 5 for this. Curtis Fuller at Channel 5 got the Skype in and asked the question, and I believe it was the first question in the briefing, and just came right out and asked the exact right timely question about what the Trump administration thinks about Cincinnati designating itself a so-called sanctuary city. And, you know, I think it's maybe a little bluster, but, you know, they threw out that, well, maybe we'll withhold federal funding from Cincinnati if this continues on. There's been no details behind that. Cincinnati technically is not really, you know, they're not breaking any law. They're not breaking any laws that we're aware of. And this is really, they're really not doing anything differently. They're just calling themselves a sanctuary city.
Right. As I understand it, we've really been operating under sanctuary city rule since 2015. When police department's policy has not been to ask people about their immigration status when they have contact with them. So in essence, the designation of sanctuary city, it's nothing really new for Cincinnati. And David, in this case, the term sanctuary city it's pretty ambiguous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a term that really doesn't have any legal definition. You know, for the mayor to come out and say we're a sanctuary city, it sounded like all of a sudden something changed, but really nothing changed. You know, the city has been operating and the county has been operating under that policy for a couple years or so that, you know, they're not going to go out of their way to track down undocumented immigrants, but will comply with federal authorities if asked to. That hasn't changed. Nothing's changed. So it was really sort of a political statement more than anything else that the mayor made.
Joe, how much authority does the federal government have in this case? I mean, can they actually withhold funding?
Well, you know, they do have quite a bit of authority because if you think about it, the state and cities get a lot of pass-through money from the federal government. Now, the question is, will they? And how much will they withhold? And you know, we've got this issue too out here about the courts. And the courts are weighing in on this immigration issue. The whole situation is very fluid right now, so exactly how things would kind of shake out, that's yet to be determined. But technically, yes, I the federal government could actually withhold money from these cities.
So how many sanctuary cities are there in Ohio, Joe? Do we know exactly how many?
Well, I think we have two that have actually called themselves that, but we have many more. I think that
so
not
Cincinnati
many,
and
but
Columbus.
We have a few more. Yeah, yeah. But we have, you know, the policy of a sanctuary city. The definition of sanctuary city is kind of loose, and the policy of actually being determined a sanctuary city, they designate themselves that way. But a lot of them are following the policy because basically a lot of them are saying, you know what, we're not going to expend our own local funding to try to enforce federal law. And if you want to do it, then you have to come in, federal government, and you have to pay for it. That is a sanctuary city type of philosophy. And we have several cities in Ohio that have taken that stand.
Jason, what kind of impact might it have on Cincinnati if they do withhold funding? What areas would this affect?
Well, I mean, there's the Brent Spence Bridge has been thrown out there, but let's keep in mind that most of that, I mean, the bridge itself is owned by Kentucky. And certainly Kentucky, Matt Bevin, the governor there, is really in lockstep with the Trump administration. So keep that in mind in terms of federal money. Most of that's going to go through Kentucky for the Brent Spence. I honestly, just my honest take of this whole thing is that I think it's bluster and I don't think it will happen. However, if it does, it could be something serious for something like the Western Hills Viaduct, which really desperately needs fixing and will need a lot of federal money to get fixed. And so maybe the Trump administration says, oh, sorry, Cincinnati, we're not going to give you that $80 million for the Western Hills Viaduct. Mm-hmm. It's putting people's safety at risk, but you know, I don't know if they'll play those games or not.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, what are your thoughts on this in terms of is this bluffing or is this real?
I think it's just really hard to tell at this point. I think the Trump administration has made a lot of claims and things that they're going to do, and they've certainly been following through with many of them. So, he said in the press conference, or his spokesperson said in the press conferences, this is something they're going to pursue. So that could certainly happen. But what form it would take, there are so many different ways that cities get federal money through grants, through various programs. So it's really hard to tell right now.
Yeah, one of the legal arguments that I've heard made against this is the separation of powers argument, that really the administration, the executive branch, can't just pull funding. This is something that would have to go through Congress, which has the power of the purse. And I'm wondering how much that's going to play into this whole debate.
Certainly you're correct. Like, especially when I think a lot about transportation, because that's where there's just so much federal money that comes for those projects. And certainly it's up to Congress to pass the transportation bill and to determine where that money's going. So, yeah, it is. I'm with Jesse on that. Like, I mean, I do kind of in my heart, my gut think that it is bluster because you have all those checks and balances with the Congress. But ultimately, you don't know. And certainly Trump, so far through 3 weeks, is certainly shown that he is going to follow through on what he's been telling people, for better or worse.
And Dave, what do you think? Is this a whole lot of noise without a lot of substance? Is this just a chance for politicians to play to their base?
Yeah, I think that's what it's become. It seems to me that it'll be a wedge issue politically this year, and I think you saw that when Josh Mandel came down here the day after Cranley said we were a sanctuary city. He's the treasurer of Ohio, but happens to be running for Senate again. Held his own news conference and touted a proposal by a state legislator in Middletown that would hold public officials liable for felony charges if an undocumented immigrant commits a crime. Excuse me. I think that was just a taste of the whole politicization of this issue that we're going to see as this year goes on. This is going to be a highly charged issue, and it's really unfortunate because immigration is a very complicated issue that really needs a lot of thought, a lot of good rational dialogue, and it's not getting that.
Jesse and Joe, can you tell us a little bit more about that bill? Candace Keller, state rep from Middletown, is who has proposed that. Josh Mandel is behind it, also promoting it. What exactly does that bill say? It bans sanctuary cities, and what does it say as far as possible criminal penalties?
So this is something that was proposed this week. We haven't actually seen the language of the bill, so it hasn't yet been introduced. But the gist of it would be to ban sanctuary cities in Ohio and also to have some criminal and civil liability for city officials who put sanctuary cities in place, up to a fourth degree felony criminal charge if a undocumented immigrant injures or kills someone within the city. So the idea would be, you know, the mayor could face criminal charges if an undocumented immigrant seriously injures somebody in Cincinnati, which is certainly outside the realms of normal repercussions for these types of things.
And hard to enforce, I might add.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be difficult.
And Jesse and Joe, I mean, have you heard from any city officials how they react to this? Jesse, in your case, John Cranley, what's the mayor said about that? And Joe, if you've heard from anybody in Columbus or any other city officials who say, nah, this, what their opinion is on this whole thing?
So basically, the mayor said that they're not breaking any federal laws, which is true, and said that this would just be infringing on their First Amendment rights to make this statement about undocumented immigrants in the city. Obviously not very excited about the proposal that he could be thrown in jail for these kinds of things.
Right. And, you know, the Democrats up here in the Ohio House, they've actually gone out and put up some competing legislation, if you will. And basically that legislation would say that these cities who are sanctuary cities couldn't be prosecuted, couldn't face penalties because of the whole immigration thing. So it's kind of the anti-Mandel bill.
Also,
anti-Keller bill.
Also worth noting that the Democrats are in the minority in the Ohio House.
That's right.
So
yeah,
odds of this bill getting much traction are pretty slim.
Correct.
But Jesse, you were mentioning too that this is just the bill to ban sanctuary cities is in its very early stages as well. What are the chances that this gets through?
Well, I talked a little bit with people in the GOP caucus, and Republicans hold the majority in the Ohio House and Senate pretty resoundingly. And so they haven't even taken a look at it, really haven't had discussion on it. So I think it's going to be something once we see the bill and see what it actually says. You know, they say the devil is always in the details. So I think that's when we're really going to have a debate about whether this has a future in Ohio.
And was wondering too, some UC students and faculty are pushing the administration to declare sanctuary status. And I'm just wondering if there are any other colleges in Ohio that have declared that status, and well, if anybody knows of any other universities that have done that.
Yes. A lot of the colleges, if they haven't gone that far, at least they've said that they are not going to cooperate with the federal government in giving up names and giving up information. And I mean, the colleges here in Ohio, both the public and private, are coming out pretty overwhelmingly saying, we're not going to cooperate. They have, you know, students who have come in here to study. They have professors who are here that, you know, in the case of, you know, some of the hospitals, the learning hospitals, they have doctors who are in here actually working and saving lives. And they said, you know, we're not going to give these people up. We're not going to cooperate and basically allow the federal government to come in here and extract our people without a fight.
And Joe, if I understand correctly, the American Civil Liberties Union has also come out against the ban on sanctuary cities.
Oh, yes. They were out against it from minute one. Anyone who was watching a couple of weekends ago when people were trying to come in and they were being detained at the major airports, the ACLU nationally was taking over some of the commissary areas where they have food at the airports, the McDonald's and whatnot, and taking over those areas and had attorneys in here working. They've got drafts. They're going after these situations, and they will continue to fight. They see this as a number one issue for them. This is very high on their list of things to fight for because they think it's, you know, it's basically American civil liberties for all who are here.
And we will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. It's our weekly review of news affecting the tri-state area. And joining us today, Cincinnati Inquirer government reporter Jesse Balmert and local politics reporter Jason Williams, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, and WCPO.com opinion editor David Holthouse. You can join our conversation this afternoon at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jesse, what is Governor Kasich's position on sanctuary cities? Has he said anything about this bill that's been suggested?
Yes, he actually had a meeting this week with the editors of Ohio's newspapers, and he said that he agreed with the president that the sanctuary cities weren't necessary. But he also said that he didn't necessarily think we needed legislation on this issue. So kind of splitting the difference there.
So, Joe, what's your gut feeling on this? Do you think that at some point we will have this ban on sanctuary cities?
Well, I think as this goes on, we're going to hear some people weighing in on it that we haven't heard really loud and clear up till now, especially when you look at the business community weighing in. A lot of people who are here are working in the business community, providing important services. And we have heard here at the State House, there's been a lot of talk about how there are jobs out there that we don't have people to fill those jobs. And some of those jobs are being performed by people who businesses have brought in from other countries to do that work. And so as we go on with this debate, I think we're going to start hearing some more of those arguments, and it's going to put Republicans who are in charge of the State House, it's going to put them in a position where they're going, you know, business is a huge constituency of theirs as well. So they're going to have to look at that and make some decisions. But I think, you know, everyone's right. It's really too early to tell. We're just going to have to wait and see how that plays out.
And David, what about you? What's your sense of this? Where do you think this ends up?
Well, I don't know. I mean, with sanctuary cities being such a sort of squishy concept, I don't know how you could really ban them. But I think there will be, and already have been, obviously, some legislative efforts to try to restrict that. And I think that will continue. In Ohio, given the state of the current political environment, and I think that really it sort of overshadows, though, the bigger debate around immigration, and it's kind of almost a sideshow, really, on the whole immigration debate, and it doesn't look like there will be any serious, comprehensive reform or changes to our immigration laws in any time in the near future, given the heated debates around sanctuary cities and banning refugees and so forth. So I think we'll just see more of the same as the next few years go on.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk to Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Okay, go right ahead.
I don't understand why we feel the need to provide shelter to people who are here illegally and have obviously committed another crime to be detained already, and why we would risk all of our federal funding, which we badly need. Where would Cincinnati come up with the 80, or Kentucky come up with the $80 million for the viaduct? And why should we risk that for people that have already broken the law, not once, but twice?
Okay. Any thoughts, anybody? That is one of the arguments over this whole debate, is why risk federal dollars?
Well, Mayor Cranley, I think the day after he came out with the sanctuary city announcement, sort of not really backtracked, but clarified that, we aren't violating any federal laws and we don't intend to violate any federal laws. And he had a legal opinion from the city solicitor to that effect that he also made public. So, I think if there's an attempt to withhold any federal funds, there would be a big battle and lawsuits and so forth around that. So I don't know how likely that is. It might be, as Jason said, bluster or a threat at this point. And to the point of committing crimes, I mean, if a person commits a crime, they are prosecuted, hopefully just like any other person would be. So if they're here and law-abiding and, you know, not causing trouble, not committing crimes, then, you know, the city's saying, we're not going to go out of our way to track you down just because you happen to be undocumented, which sounds like a civilized thing to do.
Is that right, Jason? They're just saying that they're not going to enforce federal immigration law. The federal authorities can still come in and do it.
Absolutely. Right. Excuse me. It's interesting. I know it sounds, and David just really hit on it well, like it may sound overly simplistic, but people have asked this on Twitter, is that if someone is committing a crime, a robbery, heaven forbid, something more serious, you know, they will be arrested. They're not allowed just to run free and do whatever they want. They will be arrested. And actually, if this person is here, an undocumented immigrant, that person will be arrested, prosecuted, and subject to deportation. So it's not like the city is just letting anyone who's here illegally or not documented to just do whatever the heck they want to do.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Jenny in East Walnut Hills. Hi, Jenny. Jenny, you had a question about clarifying a definition?
Yes. I was kind of similar to what Andrew just said. An undocumented person, according to what I understand, is someone who is in this country outside of the legal process, so they're here illegally. I think Andrew might have been saying the same thing, like they're already breaking a law by being here illegally. And I was curious, because I've heard your guests say that we have undocumented illegally people here in the country illegally working in our hospitals and going to our schools, and I'm curious, you know, is that the definition of an undocumented person, someone who is here outside of the legal process, and is that an issue that they're here working in our hospitals and in our schools illegally?
Okay. Anybody?
Well, the thing is that what we're seeing, what had happened at the airports is we were seeing people who were being detained who even had green cards. There are certain, there are different ways that you can be here legally. Green card is almost citizenship. That's, you know, usually it's a situation where you've got a lot of vetting going into this, you know, getting the green card. Sometimes you're married to an American citizen. You have to live here for a long while before you can officially get that status. And, you know, there are other ways you come in on visas or different things. And sometimes people can overstay a visa. They could have gotten into the country legally, but they might have overstayed their visa. There are a lot of I's and T's that get dotted in that process, that things that can fall through the cracks. And so someone who came into the country legally at some point might not be here legally now, because it is a very complicated system. And I think that's, you know, some of the folks that we're talking about who have visas and who are here legally are getting caught up in the hunt for the people who are not here legally. And that was part of the problem we saw on that weekend, that they tried to detain everyone and keep them from coming in.
Let's talk to Laura in Lawrenceburg. Hi, Laura.
And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a similar question. I understand that if our businesses in Cincinnati, hospitals, schools, universities, so forth, have people working that are here illegally, oftentimes it is because their visa has expired. Isn't it incumbent upon the businesses who have hired these individuals to make sure that they've gone through the process correctly, extending their green card, extending their visa, or otherwise making sure that these people that they value are not breaking the law?
I believe it is. Probably much like it's for human resources to hold just any employee accountable on things, on trainings or getting documentation in on health insurance or
like well, I did. And don't businesses have to go through the e-verification system for employees to make sure that they're legally eligible to work in the country?
Yep. And so I do believe there is a certainly a responsibility upon the businesses to do something. Certainly there's also responsibility, I believe, on the individual as well. But I won't argue that companies have a responsibility in this.
Talk to Lynn in Alexandria now. Hi, Lynn. Hello, Lynn. You had a question about federal rules on funding?
Hello.
Hello, you're on. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I hope this isn't redundant because I didn't hear the entire program. But number one, I wanted to say, with respect to Supreme Court addressing the issue of whether the government can withhold funds, I heard a female speaker say that she thought that they could. But there is a limitation on that. I don't remember the particular case, but the Supreme Court said that basically it had to be related to whatever law was being broken. In other words, Obama withheld funds or threatened under Title IX or whatever it was regarding the transgender bathrooms. So he did the, he did it through the education statutes, sports, I think it was, or whatever it was. But the point being,
it was through Title IX. That's right.
Funds. So it has to be kind of related to, there has to be a nexus between which law was being, and that creates problems because a lot of the state funds come in through block grants. And the second thing I want to say is just in general, as an attorney for, regarding sanctuary cities, I find it obnoxious in relation to, I think people don't realize how much this contributes to anarchy and just selective enforcement of law. It's like, well, if we don't feel like obeying this law, we won't. We're going to make our own decisions locally. I don't think you guys understand the message that creates for the community and particularly for illegals. They think that the squeaky wheel gets the attention. The vast majority of population doesn't realize what a minority that is out there protesting and causing all these scenes and violence and looting and everything else. So I really have a problem with sanctuary cities. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call, Lynn. Let's talk to Aaron in Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. Am I on?
Yeah, you are.
Hi. So I am a lifelong restaurant guy, and I've worked alongside undocumented immigrants from not just Mexico, but all over Central America for most of my life. My experience with them has been that they're some of the most humble, hardworking, family-oriented, and moral people I've ever known. And as far as if the only law they're breaking is a violation of immigration policy, in my opinion, those are unjust laws, and I'm very proud to live in a city that's pledged to not enforce or pursue and prosecute these people in that way, because I think they do nothing but add to the character of our country. Thank you.
Aaron, thank you for the call. And so where does this head next, everybody? What do you think comes next? Jesse, what do you think?
I think we're going to be having a debate on this on the state level. Obviously, there's going to be those two bills that we're going to be looking at, either banning sanctuary cities or making Ohio a sanctuary state. So I think that's something. Also, Josh Mandel, who is the Ohio treasurer, who is running for U.S. Senate against Sherrod Brown in 2018, or he hopes to run against him. He has certainly made this an issue in his campaign, and I think he's going to continue to bring it up.
Okay.
I just wanted to make one comment about the previous caller. He sounds like a conscientious employer, but there may be many other employers that aren't so conscientious about employing undocumented people. And if they know that they're undocumented, that gives them a lot of leverage over the employee. They could pay them less than the minimum wage. They can make them work 15 hours a day. What recourse does that person have then if they're here illegally? They're not going to go to the authorities and complain about this. So it puts them in a very difficult situation. It puts the employee in a very difficult situation, potentially, if there's an employer who's not as conscientious.
Dave, but you think this is going to be a wedge issue, something that we're going to be debating for a long,
absolutely.
Long stretch.
I think we're going to hear about this all year long, up to the elections and beyond this year. Yep.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. It's our weekly review of news affecting the tri-state area. And joining us today, Cincinnati Inquirer government reporter Jesse Balmert and local politics reporter Jason Williams, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, and WCPO.com opinion editor David Holdhouse. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'd like to move on to another topic now. Governor Kasich has his proposed budget. Jesse, what are we looking at in this particular budget? How tight is this going to be, considering that Governor Kasich has said that Ohio is on the verge of recession?
So it's certainly going to be tighter than other budgets. I think that was also kind of setting expectations for agencies and just everybody knowing that you're not going to get a lot of extra money in this budget. But there's, I mean, like any two-year budget, there's a lot in there. There's a increase in the sales tax to 6.2%, so that's up from 5.75%. Also wanting to expand the number of services that are taxed, so things like cable television and elective plastic surgery, a 1 cent increase in tax on beer and wine, and also the governor always is trying to tax oil and gas through the fracking practice. Some of these things have been introduced before, and Republicans in the House and Senate are just not that excited about them. So there are a lot of things in the budget that may not be in the budget by the end of June.
And Joe, what does this budget have in it in terms of funding for schools? Anything new there?
Well, it's basically, this is something that's likely to change. First of all, let's put that up front. The governor has basically made changes in the school's funding formula based on attendance and how many students are in a particular school. The effect of what he's done, though, means that some districts are not going to get as much as they've gotten in the past, and that they're not going to feel that it's fair. And we've seen in the past when he's tried to tinker with school funding formula, the Ohio House and Senate, which both of those bodies will have to deal with this budget, they've gone back and changed it dramatically. So, you know, the governor, though, was asked, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, you know, what do you do in some of these cases where they just can't make ends meet in some of these schools? And he said, well, put a levy on the ballot. And for, you know, some school districts are saying, we can't do that. We are. And the other thing is, we have the, well, it's now kind of a moot point in, as far as practicality, at least. But we've had the Supreme Court decision that said that Ohio had an over-reliance on property tax, and that we should be having a funding formula that skews away from that. And if our bottom line is that, you know, it has to be, the schools have to be funded with property tax in order to make ends meet, I think that we're going to see a lot of outcry from a lot of legislators who are going to say, wait a minute, wait, we're not going to do that. So I think what we're seeing now in the governor's budget as far as basing the money that schools get on the pupils they actually have in the classroom, I think that's very likely to change in the future based on what's happened in the past and on the way the funding formula exists.
And Joe, doesn't that Supreme Court, the Ohio Supreme Court ruling that you're talking about, doesn't that date back to 1990?
Yeah, it goes back a long time. I think it was 1990.
It's the DeRolf case, if I remember right.
Right, it's the DeRolf case. And it basically, the Supreme Court came back four times and each time said, you're not doing it right, you're not doing it right. And the last time they came back, I think it was 2004. I can't remember the exact, it's been many years ago. And they came back and they said, yeah, it's still not right, but yeah, we're not going to make you fix it. You know, it was kind of left there.
Jesse, how much does this this budget proposal, how much does it increase spending by?
Do you know the answer to that, Joe?
Yeah.
It's not a great deal, if I remember right.
I really don't think it's very much.
It's a very small percentage.
Yeah, well, does 4 sound about right?
Possibly.
It's one of those things. There's
again, it goes back to the idea
that decreases in others. So yeah. it's hard
and
to
it
say
how you define increase. You know, I'm sure that you'd have five different people in a room, and they'd use different stats to explain how they would define an increase. So
yeah, and there are some changes in income tax, which is the governor's one that he really tries to emphasize on. I mean, there's fewer tax brackets. There would be, decreasing in the top rate for that. So the argument is kind of, let's maybe increase some things on the sales tax revenue and then,
decrease some things on the income side.
Income tax.
Mm-hmm. Does this proposal lay out any provisions for paying for Medicaid?
Well, it tries to, but I think a lot of that's going to depend on what happens at the federal level with Obamacare, because basically Ohio's Medicaid system, a lot depends on what the federal government does. If they get rid of Obamacare and they don't put anything in place, our state has expanded the Medicaid system. We would have a lot of people that would be on the system that we couldn't afford. There is a proposal, a part of this proposal, that says that some of those people who on Medicaid who earn a little more might start paying a fee to participate, that sort of thing. And we might see something like that come down the pike, especially when the House and Senate get hold of it. They might put some of those provisions in there. But mostly that's going to depend on what happens at the federal level.
Yeah, this budget is set up as if Medicaid expansion is going to continue to exist, because that's what we have right now. And also odds are that the federal government is not going to, overhaul this by June 30th, which is when we need to pass the state budget by. So they're kind of setting it up based on the current situation.
And Jesse, you wrote about this, that starting in July, Ohio and its counties and its transit authorities aren't going to be allowed to collect sales taxes on organizations that manage Medicaid patients' care. And what's going to be the impact for, say, Hamilton County with something like that? And does this budget address this issue at all?
So it does. It's a sales tax on Medicaid managed care organizations. And basically, it was the way that we were doing it. The federal government had some problems with. And so starting July 1, we're not going to be able to do it that way anymore. There is a replacement in the budget for what the state collects from that, which I believe is about $500 million. Hamilton County gets about $14 million from this. And they would continue to get the revenue from that through the end of 2017. And after that point, they would be kind of weaned off of it. Now, this represents about 7% of Hamilton County's sales tax revenue, which is not an insignificant amount, but counties like Vinton County, it's a quarter of their sales tax revenue. So that's going to be harder hitting some of those areas. So obviously county officials are not excited about losing any sales tax revenue. But I think there is some effort from the state government to wean them off of this.
So, but they're not getting a whole lot of relief from this, this budget proposal.
Certainly not by the second year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so what are there any areas of this budget where there might be some differences between the governor and the GOP lawmakers?
There are a lot of them. First of all, I think even the governor would admit that he anticipates that the legislature will immediately take that severance tax and throw that in the trash, because they have not been open to a severance tax proposal, and they have not indicated that they would be open to that. So, and the governor basically said, I just keep trying because maybe they'll have a change of heart. But that's one big area that's going to go. I think also, like I indicated before, when they start looking at those school numbers, looking at the education formula, I think, you know, you got to remember we have a whole lot of legislators up here in Columbus who came from very small areas of the state, schools that are likely to lose funding under Governor Kasich's model. And they're going to want to rectify that. You know, they have to get reelected, so they don't want to go home and face angry mobs, you know, at the school board meetings or anything. So I think we're going to see some changes there. I think we're also likely to see some changes tinkering around with the way that they put the Medicaid through. I think, you know, we're going to see... And I'm not sure exactly what part of the proposal they'll go through with, but we have heard a lot of lawmakers talk about personal responsibility. And I think that when they get their hands on it, they're going to want to tighten that up, maybe even make Medicaid recipients pay more or somehow dwindle down the rolls so that there's not as much coverage for those who can afford to pay more. We haven't heard anything about, you know, flexible spending accounts, and certainly most of that would be on the federal, you know, the federal government, but there would be some things that the state could do as far as that, that, you know, we've just got a lot of questions there, but I think it's going to look entirely different when lawmakers get a hold of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as you were saying, Jesse, this has to be in place by June 30th.
Yes. It's part of our constitution. We have to pass a balanced budget.
So one way or the other, something will pop up. But what about money for the heroin epidemic? Is there any of that in the governor's proposal?
So there are some tweaks and some changes to what we would be doing addressing the drug epidemic, but I think a little bit more money for drug courts. But largely, the governor has said that Medicaid expansion is in place to provide drug treatment and funding for that, and that the state has been giving counties and cities resources on this, and they just need to take advantage of them. So I imagine cities and counties don't feel like that's adequate. I know in Hamilton County, there was a huge push to try to get some emergency funding, given the overdoses in that area. That's something that the governor has said that he can't do. Some people just say it's something he won't do.
Yeah, David, you've written a lot in terms of the heroin epidemic that the Cincinnati area faces, that the state of Ohio faces. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing that there's really no major increase in funding for providing Narcan, life-saving Narcan to first responders. And we editorialized that WCPO some months ago that the governor should declare a state of emergency to provide some emergency funding for those sorts of things. And he hasn't done that, and there's nothing indicating in this budget that he will.
On a different topic, Joe, the Pastor Protection Act, this is something that I think was introduced last year, and it's now back. So can you tell us what's going on with this, what that act is, and where that's all headed?
Well, the Pastor Protection Act, as you indicated, it was okay, let's start. People probably know the North Carolina situation down there with the whole bill on the – basically it said that you couldn't require a pastor or someone to marry someone if it was against their religion, if they had a religious objection. And it was pretty encompassing to the point that a lot of groups went out after it, and it was scaled back by lawmakers. Now, Governor Kasich, he's saying that he doesn't see support for something of that magnitude. However, he does believe that pastors should have the ability to do what they think is right for themselves in cases. So he's giving them a little bit of room there for themselves personally, but he's not going the big route that North Carolina did.
So,
and the argument on the other side is that the First Amendment already protects pastors from this, you know, freedom of religion.
So this, right. So what they're saying is it's not necessary to have this act. But Governor Kasich is supporting it. Where's the stand in the legislative process right now?
So it's just been introduced. I don't think it's had a hearing.
It hasn't had any hearings. But, you know, that's pretty much a case with most things up here right now because they just started. So it will probably get hearings. It got hearings last time around. And we'll see where it goes. But I think anything that they do that Governor Kasich's likely to sign would have to be pretty small in scale.
Okay. Let's talk about how the Ohio senators, Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown, how they have been voting on Trump appointees recently. And Jason, where do things stand with that so far?
Well, the big thing this past week has been Portman's support and vote for Betsy DeVos for Education Secretary. The backlash has been really pretty overwhelming. I got an email today, or it was yesterday, about a large group that he was to speak at Claremont County Chamber of Commerce luncheon today. Senator Portman was, and that a large group was going to go protest there. I know there was a large group that protested outside of his office in Cleveland early last week. I bet I got 50 to 70 emails from people saying they couldn't get through to his office and couldn't get through on a phone call to any of his Ohio offices, his Washington office. And so certainly that has been a very big issue, and it will be interesting to see how, as we go along here, how Portman positions himself with Trump, how that could impact him moving forward.
And Sherrod Brown voted no on Betsy DeVos, and I think that it ended in a tie, that Mike Pence had to actually break that tie.
Correct.
That's the first time that's happened, if I'm not mistaken. What about Sessions, Jeff Sessions, Attorney General? Do we know how they vote? Okay. Mike Pompeo, CIO head, I think Portman was yes, and Brown was no on that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds about right, yeah.
Okay. Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. Let's see.
Yeah, they split on that one.
They split on that one again. They did have four, actually, though, that they agreed on. They had James Mattis as Secretary of Defense, Nikki Haley as U.N. Ambassador, Elaine Chao as Transportation Secretary, and then John Kelly as Homeland Security. They agreed on those four appointees, but there's some more coming though. Yeah, so
yeah, interesting to see on the DeVos nomination, one vote could have swung it, and that's why Portman got a lot of heat on that, demonstrations in his neighborhood, around his offices. So there was a lot of pressure to be that one vote as a moderate Republican. But he stuck with the party on that one.
Yeah, it's always fascinating when a Republican senator voting for the nominee of a Republican president gets so much press. You know, it's just fascinating.
Jesse, do you think he's going to take more pressure on this?
I think he's taken a lot of pressure on it. I think it was interesting because the vote was so close. A lot of people were saying, oh, Rob Portman could be that vote that would go the other way. Because he was just reelected, so he has six more years in office. Trump has four, and then we'll have to run for reelection again. And also, Rob Portman has kind of set himself up as this kind of compassionate conservative, kind of the guy who might be willing to take on his party on certain issues. So I think some people really hung their hopes on that. But also, Rob Portman, you know, said that this is going to be good for Ohio and good for, you know, school choice. Obviously, she has had a lot of involvement in charter schools. So,
well, Jesse, Joe, Jason, David, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Glad
to.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati Inquirer government reporter Jesse Balmert and local politics reporter Jason Williams, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, and WCPO.com opinion editor David Holthouse.